The jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is Thursday, October 22nd, 2015. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios in located in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. How's that? That's my radio voice. And now we're going to spin that record. Yeah. We are heard weeknights, folks, every Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Global Star Radio Network. That is the place to be, the Global Star Radio Network. We're also simulcast on... Okay, where are we bleeding from? We had this problem yesterday. There we go. All right. We apologize for that. We're simulcast on Blog Talk Radio, and you can watch us live on YouTube. Links to each audio and video broadcasting venue can be found at our home base on the internet at HagmanandHagman.com, or even more simply, just go to HagmanReport.com. That's one G and two N's, and what happens is that'll just bunch you right to HagmanandHagman.com. And I'm Doug Hagman at the helm with fellow investigative researcher and, most importantly, my son, Joe Hagman. Together, we are the Hagman and Hagman Report, what I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. We dig into topics, the captured media, captured corporate Illuminati-controlled mass media won't and will never do. Many people adhere to the coincidence theory of historical and current events. Well, we look at the conspiratorial aspect, awakening others to the truth and the real news behind the headlines. And I'm distracted only because, you know, I've been really stuck to the Benghazi hearings and Hillary Clinton. Joe, I know you watched them as well. Anything accomplished to the in these hearings?
No.
Yeah. I don't.
Political theater.
You know something, as investigators, we learn to ask questions, but you have to ask the right questions in order to get the right answers, the correct answers. I'm not sure too many, you know, the focus of this appeared to be, the initial focus appeared to be on diplomatic security, which has really nothing to do with any of this. And then, so from what I've seen, a lot of political grandstanding. I mean, that's really it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, this big issue about the Accountability Review Board being such a an issue, and when the Accountability Review Board, the ARB report came out, of course, there were, I think, 29 recommendations made by Thomas Pickering, the former ambassador Thomas Pickering. But what's not widely known about these is Pickering is really Clinton's man, and the ARB did not address the reason, it didn't address the annex, or not the annex, but the CIA compound. This all, you're right, Joe, it's political theater, it really is.
Yep.
Anyway. It kind of got me like really twisted mentally. I don't know. Tonight's portions of tonight's broadcast brought to you by HealthMasters.com. That's HealthMasters.com, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, and you know what? FamilyEssentialShop.com. Family Essential Shop. You haven't heard that? You haven't heard us talk about that? Well, in a while. Well, Family Essential Shop, folks. It's Katie Whelan, and she's on with Dave Hodges. Sunday nights, but FamilyEssentialShop.com. Oils, oh, essential oils, yeah, big time. Anyway, Joe, I'm going to toss it to you. Tonight we got Chris Putnam coming on, and what a great guest he's going to be. We're going to be talking about a lot of things, including but not limited to the Vatican. You know, he's the author of Supernatural Worldview.
We're going to be talking about the prophecies in Isaiah chapter 17, the burden of Damascus, where
yep.
It opens up saying, "Behold, Damascus has become a ruinous heap," and we're seeing that play out today. And yeah, Chris Putnam will be joining us. He's actually filling in for Tom Horn at Chuck Missler's conference right now, And he's getting situated back in his hotel room, and he'll be joining us in just a few minutes.
Right.
About 10 minutes or so. And so he's hopefully got, I know he's got a lot to say, but hopefully he is having a good conference there and getting a lot accomplished. And hopefully he brings some of that fire from the conference onto the show.
That's right. And then our schedule now.
Ted Brewer tomorrow.
Yep. Go ahead.
Healthmasters.com. Ted Brewer will be our guest tomorrow for the whole show. And next week, we have the schedule complete, I believe. We have Jonathan Wright coming on Monday, code searcher.
Yeah, we're going to do, just to make sure people know, we're going to be keeping largely the first hour or two ourselves in most cases. In most cases, not every case. Okay, so go ahead.
And Tuesday, we're going to have the first few hours open with me and my dad hitting the news, followed by Stan Deo. Wednesday, Ross Powell and Steve Quayle will be joining us.
There'll be a full show.
And Thursday, we have Wide Open. And Friday, we don't have this solidified, but we will...
hope to have John Little.
By the end of the day today, talk with John Little and have him on next Friday. So,
that's right.
Great lineup, starting with Chris Putnam tonight, Ted Brewer tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
And, it's going to be good.
Yeah, you know, there's just so much to get into, and as we watch the issues like the Select Committee on Benghazi, do we talk about, you know, what's not being said? Of course, we must. You see the I'm looking at the monitor right now, which people can't really see, but you know the Hillary Clinton. I mean, what is it now? Eastern Time, 7:10 Eastern Time, roughly. The hearings have been going on for several hours, and
since 10 a.m.
Yeah, yeah, and I've been on them since 10 o'clock, and I listened to the opening statement or watched your opening statement, and
I've been listening since 3, roughly.
It's America is getting cheated by not just the people like Hillary Clinton, but by the politicians who claim to represent the American people. And I feel very strongly that we're never going to get the truth. And, you know, I know people in my immediate family who have told me that Benghazi is nothing more than a political, assassination attempt against Hillary Clinton, a political assassination. And my response to that is, you know, no, it's not. And it's, people are brainwashed into believing that it's a non-event. The gun running operation under the cover of diplomatic diplomacy. In other words, you had Ambassador Stevens down in Benghazi, and how many times do we have to really go over this, but new people all the time coming into this program. Stevens was involved. He was involved in overseeing the weapons rendition of weapons from Libya that Hillary Clinton and Obama and the people around them, including John Brennan of the CIA, toppled Gaddafi. Just when? Why? Why did they topple Gaddafi? I mean, Gaddafi was not a good guy, okay? We understand that, but why get involved in such affairs? Why get involved in the quagmire? Are we as a nation to depose leaders of other countries when they pose no threat to the Americans? And one can argue, well, it's terrorism. Well, no, because Gaddafi was he was actually cooperating with the government, he turned a lot of terrorists over to the American government. He identified a lot of terrorists.
He made a promise to keep the stability of the borders between Europe safe. There was a lot that was and we had Jim and Joanne Moriarty on to talk about. They lived in Libya. They were in the oil cleanup business, and they were left to die there.
Yeah,
LibyanWarTheTruth.com is our website. We plan on contacting them and having them back on, because it was a great show we did with them initially. And there's so much there.
I think Mrs. Moriarty might be ill.
She is ill. So keep praying your prayers. And for those of you out there, I don't think we've talked or mentioned this. Pastor Paul Bagley fell ill after returning from his trip to Israel.
Yeah.
He was hospitalized, and I'm sure most people know. Yeah, hospitalized
isolation.
In Canada. But I got a text from him today. He's feeling better. He's doing better. And we hope to get him on the show here within the next few weeks to a month, hopefully. But keep him in your prayers as he's still recovering.
Indeed. But what we need to do is really identify all the players. I mean, make sure that all of the it's so easy for the conservatives have made it so easy for the Marxist progressives to really cover up the crimes that took place in Benghazi and throughout the Middle East. If you watched these hearings, folks. And I'm going to do a report on these. You know we're a captured operation. You've got to know.
Yeah, and one of the things I learned from the hearing that I didn't hear prior to the hearings is that Hillary Clinton, when she was coming out and blaming a YouTube trailer of a video on blaming the video for what happened for the attack in Benghazi, at the same time she was telling her family it was an Al-Qaeda attack.
Right. That just came out today. That was not known. That was kind of the smoking gun. And I suppose, you know, is that a smoking gun? Well, no, that's not even close to a smoking gun. That's just probable cause to drag her in to show that. I mean, how many tons of weaponry how many people were trained by the CIA to topple Assad again? You know, what we're seeing happen in Syria today, and this is what Chris Putnam hopefully will really delve into, the supernatural aspect of Syria, of geopolitics. But Joe, you know, I got to tell you something, man. Really, it all, and I said this from day one, it all boils down to Syria. It all comes down to Syria. Syria is the flashpoint for World War III, and what we're seeing right here is Hillary Clinton basically taking, you know, this is her one time, apparently, that she agreed to, okay.
I think she agreed to two dates, maybe it was taken down to one.
Yeah, I'm not, well.
It's basically being held on her term.
That's the key right there. So the bottom line here, we're watching history, or history is being made behind the curtain of the daily noise, the noise of what we do every day. And how many people really, if you were to go out to the mall or go out to, I don't know, just everyday America. You know, I'm not talking about some pier, you know, where you know, kids are walking in their sandals carrying a surfboard and they don't even know what day it is. I'm talking about if you would, you know, poll people at a grocery store or somewhere where normal people, for the most part, normal people are, and if you ask them about the Benghazi Select Committee in Benghazi, I wonder how many people, or even Benghazi itself, I wonder how many people really understand the complexity behind it. And this is what we try to do. We try to explain and press home and press forward with this information because, the ambassador, three other young men, murdered, and you know, Joe, you were telling me, because I missed part of this, you were telling me that Hillary Clinton claimed that the cause of death on Stevens was
smoke inhalation. Yep.
And that's her story, and she's sticking to it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Was that before or after they sodomized the guy?
Yeah. I caught the tail. Okay. When I was driving to work on satellite radio, this is when I started to hear the testimony of Hillary Clinton. And that's one of the first things I heard her talk about. She was talking about how the cause of death wasn't, he wasn't shot or wounded. It was from smoke inhalation. Almost taking responsibility away from those attackers, it seemed to me. I would have to watch a replay of the whole question before that, because I don't know what the question that she was asked, and that was her reply, but I would have to see that whole exchange in a replay to understand it better.
Yeah, I missed bits and pieces. I mean, well, I shouldn't say, I missed chunks of it today, and but, you know, for the most part, I mean, that was on my radar, and I sent some Twitter messages out about it. early on, and I stopped because I was away from a computer. But my goodness, man, this is just it really is ridiculous. But folks, I really think she's going to come away from this unscathed. It's going to be painted as a political issue by the Marxist progressive people and leaders. The Republicans or conservatives in Congress are going to give in. They're not going to hold her or anyone else really accountable, perhaps some low-level people at best, but I don't even think that. It's going to just fade away in people's minds and in history, and you know what? She will be the presidential contender, and perhaps even the not just the nominee, but I suspect if she gets on the ballot, we'll take over, because we know we'll be the president. And I say that only because if you look at the pedigree of all the past presidents and their connection to royalty, you know, follow the bloodline and I do believe that that has something to do with it. So yeah. And you get selected, not elected. But
with us is Mr. Chris Putnam. He is the author of Petrus Romanus, Exo Vaticana, both of those co-author with Tom Horn, The Supernatural Worldview.
We have the books right here, folks.
Yeah,
you can see them.
Yeah, pull up this camera angle.
The Immortals.
The Path of the Immortals, right.
Chris, it's great to have you back on the Hagman and Hagman Report. I know you're at Chuck Missler's conference filling in. How's the conference going for you?
Well, I just got here, and the airline lost my luggage. So I'm hoping it's going to show up tonight before I have to speak in the morning, because I won't have a suit.
Oh, wow.
But I'm going to give them a break. I won't even mention what airline it was, but we had a tight flight, and we had a layover in Denver, and it was like snowing in Denver, apparently, so we landed a little late there, and they didn't have time to switch the luggage over. So I'm a little stressed about that, but probably not too bad. I'm hoping it'll be here by 8 o'clock tonight, but I'm still on East Coast time, and now I'm over in Pacific time, so I'm 3 hours later than it's supposed to be anyway, or earlier or something. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's 3 hours later where I live, in Raleigh, and so I'm tired.
I can imagine. Well, what city?
I'm really excited to be on the show to talk to you guys. Yeah.
Well, we're excited to have you. What city are you in right now? I mean, what?
I'm in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
There you go. Okay.
And that's where Koinonia House has been based for the longest time, where Chuck's ministry has been based. And so they've had this Strategic Perspectives, you know, Bible Prophecy Conference here at the Coeur d'Alene Resort for years. Chuck spends most of his time in New Zealand now. He really felt called to leave the United States and move to New Zealand. So now they have Koinonia Institute in New Zealand. And that's where he spends probably 6 months of the year.
Wow. Wow. That's across the world, obviously. Across the globe.
Yeah.
Chris,
well,
I don't know.
I'll tell you my suspicion. Chuck has a couple lectures that I've watched where he talks about the national debt. And he shows you, you know, what happens when you have a certain interest rate, a certain amount of money, there's no way to ever pay it back. It just grows, you know, just grows exponentially, and eventually the economy will fail. And I suspect that might have a little bit to do with why he went to New Zealand.
Okay. I didn't let that sink in for a moment. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're looking at a Great Depression in America probably within our lifetime if it continues the way it is.
Well, you're pretty generous with that, you know, within our lifetimes. And you're, you know, people often ask me, you know, when's everything gonna really open up and, you know, fall apart? And my answer now is
right.
Just simply when they want it to. You know, when they push that button, when they decide it's going to happen, basically.
I agree.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
When they switched the phone on, you were talking about a presidential candidate, and it sounded like a female. Were you talking about Hillary?
Yeah, I was.
We were talking about the Benghazi testimony that's been going on today.
Yeah.
I was just going to share a little factoid that I discovered when I was researching the new book On the Path of the Immortals with Tom about Hillary, because Have you ever heard of the Babylon working? It was like a black magic ritual that L. Ron Hubbard did with Jack Parsons, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory rocket scientist from NASA. They were both students of Aleister Crowley. Have you ever heard of that?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. Well, a lot of people have associated the fact that Crowley and Parsons went out in the desert in like 1947, 46, somewhere right in there, and did this ritual, and then that's when the modern UFO phenomenon really kicked in, right about the same time, like a year later or so. And so a lot of people have associated maybe Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard opened a portal that allowed all these UFOs to come in. But I did some research into what they actually did, what the ritual was about. The Babylon, to Aleister Crowley, was the archetype of the divine feminine. He called her the great whore. You know, basically out of the book of Revelation, but he was talking about a literal woman, okay? And Parsons and Crowley were trying to incarnate the ultimate archetype of the divine feminine, basically a black magic woman, you know, who was going to, you know, transform femininity in the United States. So I was like, well, that has nothing to do with UFOs, but who would be a woman that would be incarnated, you know, born right after that? Well, the first one that I found that has any significance to the feminist movement, and she was born in the same year, about 11 months later or something like that, was Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Wow. That's unreal.
Yeah. So she could be the result of the Babylon working. I don't know, but I just thought that was awfully interesting. She was the most significant person I could find that was born right after they did it.
That is such an interesting fact. And I've never heard of this Babylonian ritual or them going to the desert to perform this.
The Babylon Code.
L. Ron Hubbard, he started Scientology, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
He started his own. That same L. Ron Hubbard, yeah. So he's definitely a false prophet. And Jack Parsons was, you know, openly a satanic. He worshipped the devil, so. And they did this as a team. So, yeah, make of it what you wish. I'm not saying it's definitely hooked to Hillary, but she's the most significant person I could find close to that date.
So wait a minute. Let me just get this straight. How that connects to Hillary, and let's recap that for the audience. How that connects to Hillary is...
Okay.
Tell me again how.
Okay. So the ritual they were doing, I don't know any of the details. I don't really study black magic in detail, but I just kind of know about it. But the ritual they were doing was, you know, a series of kind of pretty, what's a good word, obscene acts that they perform in a ritual magic situation out in the middle of the desert. I know some of the things that they did, but they're obscene. But the purpose of it was basically to petition the devil to incarnate a woman, have a woman born into America that would be the archetypical, you know, like the perfect example of what they call the divine feminine. And, you know, that's, if you think about, you know, there's women certainly do deserve equal rights and things of that nature, but if you look at the kind of things that Hillary supports, we're talking about the wholesale slaughter of millions of unborn babies and things of that nature that she supports that are overtly evil. You know, I'm talking about abortion, of course. I'm talking about same-sex marriage and things like that. She is 100% behind most of these things that are degrading the morality of our country. So, you know, you look at, you have two guys that practice black magic. They're doing a ritual with the explicit purpose of having a woman born who would change the country more the way they wanted it. And the way they wanted it was, you know, open sexual expression of any kind you want. They were perverts. You know, Aleister Crowley, he's famous for sex magic, and they were all students of his. So that's really what it was about. It wasn't about UFOs. I don't think that any UFOs appeared because of that. But I think a woman somewhere could have been born if it worked. They said it worked. So Hillary seems to be a likely candidate, especially if she wins the presidency.
Which I think is going to happen. And
they're paving the way for her. I mean, yeah. There was a report out last week. Debbie Wasserman Schultz said that they decided early on the leaders of the women leaders in the Democratic Party are paving the way for Hillary to be the front runner of the Democratic Party in the elections, and they said that that was something they already decided a while back.
Yes, exactly.
Well, God help us if she does.
Well, and you make a good point here, Chris, because Paul McGuire and I off air had numerous discussions about Parsons and about Crowley, Anton LaVey, of course, the Process Church, and you're right. It was after that period of time, for example, Roswell, and then the sudden uptick in people seeing UFOs, and of course Foo Fighters and World War as around
right.
World War II, and such, and interdimensional beings. So, I mean, I think that that's a great, you know, wow, that's very interesting.
It seems like it all kind of connects together, doesn't it? Yeah,
it does.
I don't think that, you know, politics, that the way they present it to us on the news. I think it's the dog and pony show. It's bread and circuses, like the Romans said. Just keep the citizens occupied, and then we'll do what we want. And, you know, we know for a fact that there's an elite group of people, you know, that the people, the top 2-4% richest people in the world, you know, they could feed the world's poverty. They could solve poverty 7 times over just with the income of the top 2%. They could feed everybody in the world just with their income. And so, I mean, these people don't really care. But I think they have an agenda, all right? And if you want to be president and you want to be a congressman, you need millions of dollars in donations just for TV ads. So you have to go to these guys. And when you do that, you know, they're going to expect something in return. They don't give you $1 million for nothing. So they have an agenda. And that agenda runs up the middle of both parties, in my mind. And it's not necessarily overt. We don't really know what it is. We can see it sometimes. But Democrat or Republican, yeah, it'll make a difference in your checkbook. It'll make a difference in your taxes and things like that. It does affect our quality of life, but they win no matter who wins because they're picking both sides. So no matter who wins the election, they win because their agenda is going to run right up the middle. And that's kind of my opinion. You know, it's hard to prove that, but that's kind of the way I view politics.
And that's the accurate way, I believe, because, you know, we are, and I like to say we're a captured operation, and if you look at the structure of our government, what's really the difference between the Republicans and Democrats or the conservatives at this point and the progressives or Marxists? More precisely, there is none. And,
right.
You know, I got to tell you, Chris, and I don't know whether you heard this, speaking about Hillary Clinton, we have a guest on. His name is Larry Nichols. He'll be coming on, folks, again here sometime in the future. But Larry was really the ultimate Clinton insider. Believe me, he was with Bill and Hillary in the Arkansas days. And he told us, in fact, it's on one of our programs, that she would go out, or she still does, go out to California once a month. This is what he alleges now, and visits a satanic church out there in California.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. So,
wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. So,
are you familiar with that documentary called The Clinton Chronicles that came out way back?
That's who I'm talking about. Larry Nichols is the guy in the Clinton Chronicles
I thought so. All right. Yeah, so, I mean, if he's right, the Clintons were in cahoots with, Barry Seal was the pilot, I believe. They were flying cocaine from Mexico into Mena, Arkansas, and using the profits to filter to Oliver North to buy the Iran-Contra weapons. They
That's
were
correct.
Funded with cocaine dollars that were flown into Arkansas under Clinton as governor, and they knew about it. And
That's right.
Apparently, there was a crack dealer, cocaine dealer in Los Angeles named, Freeway Ricky Ross, and the CIA taught him how to make crack. And that's where the whole crack thing in the 80s started, was the CIA supplying the cocaine, and the CIA teaching them how to make crack, and then bang. And that's where all the money came from. There's books about that. I can't testify that I know it's true, but there's a lot of evidence that suggests it is.
Yeah, well, we've talked to people involved in that. At least I have, and you're exactly correct. And this is why Benghazi is so important, because if you take the Iran-Contra, what happened during that period, Benghazi is nothing more than an Iran-Contra and steroids. I mean, or Iran-Contra on crack. You know, I mean that's what Benghazi is. But okay.
And you know, I think this whole thing with Islam, and this is the book that I'm working on right now with Tom. I don't know. I know that you guys have done a lot of work on some of the secret training camps and things like that. I've seen some of your presentations. I kind of feel like what we're seeing is a Hegelian dialectic, and this is the idea that you rarely can move someone really far away from their position, but you can move them closer to yours. And it's a gradual process, you know, and the way it works is they say thesis, antithesis, synthesis. So meaning, like, you could have a thesis like Democratic Republic, the United States, you know, freedom, antithesis, Sharia law, theocracy, Islamic style. Nobody wants that. So what's the synthesis? Oh, well, let's have a new world order. Let's have a world government to police all this stuff. And that's kind of the way I'm looking at the whole conflict with Islam right now and the United States and ISIS. Is I don't think ISIS has any chance of beating the United States or winning this. We'll nuke them if we have to. They're gone. I mean, we can take care of them if we really decide to. So it's not that I think ISIS is going to take over the world and be the Antichrist. I think ISIS is going to be the antithesis that moves us toward world government, because the Pope has already come out and called for a just war to stop ISIS. But he says, not one country can do this. That's wrong. It has to be done through the United Nations. That's what the Pope has said. So they're really trying to move this toward a world government, and I think that's what it's all about.
You know, I'm so glad you said that, because we look on the Internet, and we look, well, just all you have to do is look on the Internet, and you see these websites dedicated to really slamming Islam. Now, rightfully so, you know, the terrorist attacks and such. I get all that.
Right.
And fighting this Islamic takeover of our government. But what none of these websites really dare venture into the territory of saying, wait a minute, the Muslims who are terrorists are the tools of the New World Order. They don't go far enough. Like you just said, this is what it's all
right.
about. And boy, I just hope people really just understood and got, and folks, go back and listen to what Chris Putnam just said, man, because that's what it's all about.
Thank you very much. I just can't envision a world where people are voluntarily going to become Muslims. I mean, who's going to give up all their freedoms and follow Sharia law? And yeah, I just don't see that happening. There's too many people that are going to stand up against that, especially Americans and Europeans. You know, they're not going to go for that. They just don't believe it. I mean, the Quran is just not terribly credible, to be honest with you. It's plagiarized from the Hebrew Bible, and it's got mistakes in it that are obvious. So I don't see Islam taking over, but they are the perfect antithesis to lead us to a world government, because we need protection. And, you know, how are we going to stop millions of Syrians getting killed? You know, we need the UN. We can't just be America. You know, this is the message that we're hearing. So, you know, I see them in that role. But you're right. They're Muslims who certainly aren't evil people, you know, not really. I mean, that's not their intention. The Bible says everyone is, and I understand that. But, I mean, they're peaceful Muslims. They certainly are. And there's parts of the Quran that disagree with the way people like ISIS act. It's really kind of contradictory. And the thing that I found the most amazing in my research lately is if you read the Quran carefully, it predicts the Jews will return to Israel in the end times. So if you actually believe the Quran, you wouldn't be trying to run the Jews out of Israel, because it says they're supposed to be there. I don't even understand where they get this stuff from. It's in the Quran.
Yeah, exactly. Very
it's the
good
Hadith
point.
That actually contradict the Quran, and the Hadiths are notoriously inaccurate at times. Not even Muslims accept a lot of the Hadiths. If you don't know what I mean, the Hadiths are just it's a fancy name for the sayings of Muhammad, and most of these were written 100 years after Muhammad died. He died in 635. Most of the Hadiths these sayings of Muhammad. It's like so-and-so heard so-and-so say that the prophet said this. So some are even third person, I mean, three cases away from Muhammad. But it's like supposedly things Muhammad said. So most of the eschatology, most of the end-time prophecies are in Hadith, not the Quran. The Quran does predict a day of judgment, a day of resurrection, but it doesn't have the Mahdi, who is like the savior of Islam, who's gonna defeat the Antichrist, they call the Dajjal, along with Jesus. And it depends on which Hadith you read. Some Hadith say the Mahdi killed Jesus, and he killed the Dajjal, and some Hadith say Jesus killed the Dajjal. So they don't even agree with themselves. So you have all these Hadiths, and some of them are contradictory, but that's what's driving ISIS. They mostly follow these prophecies in the Hadith. And one of them says that before the last hour comes, that there's going to be a battle in the town of Dabiq, Syria. And one-third of the army will be fearful and run away, and Allah will curse them for the rest of their lives because they're chicken. And the other third will be killed in battle, and the other third will win. And then they will go on to conquer Constantinople, which is another weird prophecy, considering that today that's called Istanbul, and most of the people that live there are Muslims.
Wow.
So that's a little weird. But that's what they believe. That's what they think they're doing. And that's why they fought so hard for the city of Dabiq, Syria, and they do have it right now.
Interesting. Wow. What a great perspective. Okay. Man.
Chris, you have an article up on your on your website about Isaiah 17, the prophecy of Damascus, the burden of Damascus. Can we get into that a little bit? You know, a lot of people think, I've seen a couple different trains of thought. Some say, you know, it's not fulfilled because for it to be fulfilled, it would basically have to be bombed into oblivion. But, you know, I've seen some footage recently of Damascus. And the city is a ruinous heap. I mean, is Isaiah 17 being fulfilled right before
right
our eyes?
Yeah. That's what I'm asking. Yeah, I put a question mark on the title because it's always dangerous to claim that a prophecy is fulfilled because we've been wrong before. But, you know, a lot of scholars will try to say that it happened way in the past. But, I mean, the big claim to fame for Damascus is this is one of the oldest cities in the world. And if you read the prophecy in the Hebrew Bible, in Isaiah, he says, the burden of Damascus, behold, Damascus is taken away from being a city, and shall be a ruinous heap. How can that be so if it's still a city? You know, it just didn't happen. I mean, it might have got beat down before, but it wasn't a ruinous heap, and it wasn't taken away from being a city. But if you look at some of the footage of what Vladimir Putin is doing right now, it's the Russians that are leveling Damascus. And we have a proxy war with Russia going on right now, which could very easily lead to World War III and Armageddon. We get more into that as we go, but yeah. When he says it's taken away from being a city, it shall be a ruinous heap. You know, up until a week ago, the capital of Syria, even the oldest city in the world, it's been around since maybe 9,000 BC, they think. So, you know, I don't think it's an apocalyptic symbol or some kind of metaphor to say it'll be taken away from being a city. I think that's literal. I mean, I think they mean that. And if you look at the pictures that are coming out of Russia, I mean, it is a ruinous heap. At least parts of it are right now. Putin and the Russian Air Force are devastating the areas where they think that the anti-Assad militia groups are hiding. Now, this is why we have a proxy war. We both hate ISIS, okay? Russia bombs ISIS, we bomb ISIS. Russia a little less than we do, because the Obama administration is supporting the insurgent groups who are fighting President Assad of Syria. We want to get rid of Assad, and there's a good reason for that. He used mustard gas on his own citizens. You know, he's pretty evil. But Russia supports Assad. Russia's on Assad's side, and they don't want Assad to lose the presidency. So we, you know, even though we're against Assad, Russia is supporting some of the anti-Assad groups. It's really weird, but they're still defending him. Russia is attacking the anti-Assad groups that aren't ISIS, like the ones that Obama supports. So there's
the
all these little militias who are attacking Assad, and they have, there's three or four different ones. And Obama's funding them. He's giving them weapons. He's giving them training because he wants to see Assad overthrown. Russia does not want to see Assad overthrown. Russia is bombing the groups that Obama is supporting. So that's a proxy war. That's Russia versus the United States with proxies. Okay? The only thing that makes it kind of throws a wrench in the works is ISIS is trying to fight Assad. We hate ISIS, and Russia hates ISIS, too. So they're bombing ISIS, and we're bombing ISIS. So everybody's against ISIS, but Russia's pro-Assad, and we're not. That's the only difference. It's kind of complicated, but that's basically the summation of how that's going.
And Chris, we've talked about
war.
Exactly, and we've talked about this on the show before. This is really spy versus spy, chess on three levels, whatever you want to call it. And this is what Benghazi, right now, you know, if you turn on CNN or C-SPAN right now, where you're at, Chris, or where anyone's at, you can watch the Benghazi, Select Committee on Benghazi going on. Well, this is what Benghazi was all about, because we were funneling from Libya. You know, weapons and stuff to the anti-Assad rebels, and of course
the rebel groups, the ones the Russians are bombing now. The crazy thing with ISIS though is it's just like what happened with the Taliban when we funded them against to fight Russia in that proxy war. The Taliban was fighting for Afghanistan against the USSR, and we were training the Taliban, giving the Taliban weapons. Well, you know, we left a lot of Humvees and tanks and weapons with Iraq when we left, and we pulled our troops out, and the Iraqi army ran like chickens when ISIS came, and ISIS took all the Humvees and tanks, and now they're shooting at us with them.
Exactly.
Just like the Afghanis were.
Man. It's really ridiculous what's going on. But you know, as I mentioned, the Select Committee on Benghazi. Do you think we're going to hear any of that? No, we're going to hear about the
maybe in 20 years,
if that. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
But this is the bigger picture, and thank you for really addressing that, man. I got to tell you. Well, but let me ask you about Damascus. Doesn't the prophecy call for Damascus to be uninhabitable, or is that just a, you know, not just destroyed but uninhabitable?
I don't recall that. I mean, I do remember it saying that about Babylon in Isaiah. He said Babylon would be uninhabitable. He said the only thing that would be there would be demons and centaurs.
Oh boy.
I mean, he really, that was Babylon that I remember. But I don't remember that in Isaiah. I think, what is it, 11?
It's Isaiah 17. It says, the burden of Damascus.
17.
Behold, Damascus
is taken away from being a city and shall be a ruinous heap. You know, I don't know.
It goes on to talk about a remnant. It talks about the.
It said there'll be animals there that'll lay down. It says the fortresses will cease from Ephraim, and the kingdom from Damascus, and the remnant of Syria. So maybe a few people. But, I mean, that seems imminent. It really does. It seems like it could happen in any moment. And, you know, if that's going to happen in any moment, I think it's all playing. It's coming to Armageddon. And it could be Vladimir Putin, I think, is an excellent candidate, one of the best I've seen in years, to be Gog of Magog, to be honest with you, because a lot of Christians are looking at him like he's some kind of Christian hero, but he's not. I promise you. He's not. And the prelate of the Russian Orthodox Church, he's basically their pope. His name is Patrick Krill, okay? Now, I've been researching all this, connecting it to the Catholic Church, connecting it to Petrus Romanus, this whole thing, and I haven't veered at all from the thesis in Petrus Romanus that Pope Francis very well might be the false prophet, because I haven't seen anything but confirmation. Now, it doesn't mean it's true, but it hasn't been falsified either. You know, I'm not saying that it's proven or that, you know, all these confirmations mean that I was right. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I haven't found any reason to believe I'm wrong yet either. So, you know, it's still up in the air as far as I'm concerned. The thing that'll falsify it is if his papacy ends and nothing happens. You know, or he can't call fire down from heaven, which the Bible does say the false prophet does miracles. Now, you'd be amazed. Pope Francis is being credited with all kinds of miracles already. He supposedly, a girl with Down syndrome, had holes in her heart defects. he picked up this baby and kissed it. They took it back to the doctor like a couple of weeks later, and the holes in the heart were healed. Okay, and they're crediting Pope Francis's kiss with that. He also has been credited with touching someone in a wheelchair who was paralyzed who stood up and started walking. Okay, he's been credited with that. And these are stories that I'm quoting in the book. That they'll be there. Hopefully we'll have that out this winter. And you can find them on the internet, too, if you look around. But, you know, I don't know that he is, but I suspect he is. And some of the statements he's been saying about world government are one of the main reasons that I mentioned. But he's come out openly talking about redistribution of wealth, okay? That statistic that I quoted at the beginning of the show when I said that 2% of the world's wealthiest people could see, you know, could end world hunger seven times over, I heard that from Pope Francis. And I checked it out, it's true, but that's the kind of rhetoric he's using to justify Marxism, okay? Taking your money and giving it to the poor people against your will. It's theft. But that's what Marxism always has been. That's why we've always been against it. But because people are corrupt. And Marxism does not account for human depravity. The Bible tells us that nobody is capable of making an equitable division of wealth and spreading it out. Everybody's going to look out for themselves. Most people, you know, are people are fallen. We have a fallen nature. You know, our instinct is to do what's wrong a lot of times. And it's just the way people are, and that's why we need the gospel. That's why we need a savior. We're all sinners. So the idea of Marxism inherently is antichrist, because it thinks that we're good enough to do this and feed everybody. Somebody's going to steal it. It always happens. That's why people in Africa are not dying for lack of food. They're dying because some warlord sits on all the food or sells it or lets it rot in a warehouse. And that's the truth.
Yeah.
And we've donated enough food to feed Africa a million times over, and half the time it rots because the people in charge will not distribute it because they're evil. And this is the way, that's why Marxism will never work. It's a nice sentiment. I mean, I wish we could feed the world, but people won't do it. It's just against human nature. I mean, if they were lying in your backyard starving, you'd probably feed them. But the fact that you don't see them, you're probably not going to think about them very often. So I just don't think it's practical. I mean, capitalism isn't great either in a lot of ways, but it's a lot more realistic.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense, yes. Yeah, okay.
Capitalism does take the depravity of man into account. You know, it does. It assumes that you're going to work harder to get more money. And, you know, it's true. And so it's practical, and it works. It doesn't mean that it's godly, and it's not the way Jesus would probably have us, you know, do it, but we're not Jesus. That's the problem.
Yeah, we're all of a fallen nature.
And the Pope's message of redistribution of wealth, you know, he could start with himself and the Vatican, how much money they're worth.
Yeah,
you know?
Let's see that happen. Right. Yeah,
I mean, the billions.
Pieces of artwork. How many people you can see with a Michelangelo. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, we only have, Chris, we only have about 7 minutes left before the top of the hour. On the other side, really, there's a lot to get into. But in the 7 minutes between now and the top of the hour, speaking at what, the strategic perspectives, right?
Right.
That's what's going on. Astrobiology, the science, who are the immortals?
Science is nothing to study.
Okay.
And who are the immortals?
Okay. All right.
You want to
touch
about
on
this?
Okay. Yeah, if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, sure. Well, I was really pleased to come because there's a video, I think, on my supernaturalworldview.com website right now that has Chuck Messler has an interview with Derek Gilbert, I think, interviewed him. And Chuck recommends the chapter that I wrote on astrobiology as the definitive work on the subject. That's what he said. So I was really honored by that because Chuck has always been one of my mentors, and I learned the Bible from Chuck when I was a new Christian. I probably listened to every single tape he ever did ever at Calvary Chapel on every book of the Bible when I was a new Christian. So Chuck's always been somebody that's been influential, and so I was really honored to hear him say that because I did write, and I'm basically going to be teaching from that chapter. But, you know, astrobiology is the combination of astronomy, the study of space, and biology, the study of life. Now, the problem is we don't know of any life in space. Nobody's ever proven that there's any. There's a lot of speculation, but nobody knows about it. We don't have one single example. I find it kind of ironically amusing that you can go get a PhD at a university in a subject that has absolutely nothing to study. So that's kind of the punchline and the title. But I'm going to show you why. You know, they keep talking about these Earth-like planets that they find. Yeah, that's why we got the title Exo-Vaticana. They call them exoplanets because they're outside of our solar system. But they call them Earth-like, and they're not Earth-like. They have no idea what they're like. What they know is that that planet is in a comparable distance from its star to the Earth and our sun. And all that means is it's possible that liquid water could be there. They don't know it's there, but it's possible because it's not too hot, it's not too cold. If it's too hot, it all burns off, it stings. If it's too cold, you have a big chunk of ice. So you have to be within a certain distance from your star that you're, you know, revolving around to even host liquid water. And liquid water is obviously necessary for all life as we know it. So if this exoplanet is within the habitable zone, or what they call the Goldilocks zone, because it's not too hot, not too cold, then they'll call it Earth-like. But they have no idea if it's Earth-like. They have no idea. So that's a misnomer. And a lot of people are deceived by that because they read in the paper, they just discovered another Earth-like planet. And so it's like inevitable that there must be aliens. You know, that's the kind of stuff you hear, but it's just not the case. I'm going to unpack a lot of that from a scientific perspective. And I don't use the Bible to say there's no such thing as aliens, because the God could not tell us everything he's ever done. He's a bit eternal. You know, he's an eternal being, and we're definitely not. And God could have done all kinds of things that we don't know about. He doesn't deserve us an explanation. We don't deserve an explanation for everything he ever did. So maybe there are aliens. I'm open to that possibility. But God did give us some really specific prophecies about what to expect and about humans. And Jesus died for the sins of Adam, okay, not E.T. All right. Well, you know, you take that, and what Bible prophecy tells us to expect and to be looking forward to is the return of Jesus Christ. It doesn't say anything that leads me to believe that benevolent extraterrestrials are going to come down here and help us in our spiritual evolution. But if you read what some of these Jesuits are saying, that's what they're saying, that E.T. might come down here to evangelize us. But even that's so anti-biblical. There's nothing in there that would lead you to that conclusion in the Bible. But there's plenty of places in the Bible where Jesus says, do not be deceived. He says, you know, right before I come, it's going to be a time of unparalleled deception. So when I look at these theories about aliens coming and helping us and stopping nuclear wars and all these Pollyanna ideas that I hear, I look at them as much more likely being the deception Jesus was talking about, because I don't see anything about them showing up and helping us out in the prophecies.
Man. And you know, amen, Jesus said that, you know, you don't believe the earthly things I tell you, how can I explain the heavenly things to you? So there is an unknown, you know.
Yeah,
a whole,
I mean, he didn't tell us if he created other beings. Yeah, but he maybe the angels are technically extraterrestrials. I don't know, but I tell you, technically they are, because they're not of this earth, but they're not the same as us. But you know, I'm not saying aliens don't exist. I'm just saying I don't have any good reason to believe they do.
Yeah, exactly.
The argument that you usually hear from secular people, if you remember that movie with Jodie Foster called Contact, right?
Yeah.
She was like talking to her dead father, and he would say, well, if there's nothing out there, it's an awful waste of space. You remember that?
Yep.
That was the line they used at the Contact. So, but the thing is, think about this. We're talking about God, omnipresent, omnitemporal, omnipotent. Okay, he's all powerful. He can do anything he wants. He can create 5 more universes if he wants to, right? So how does the concept of wasted space even apply to a being who can do anything? There's no waste. You get that? I mean, the universe is huge. I get it. And if we're the only ones here, boy, it seems to us like wasted space. Maybe to an eternal being who's omnipotent, there's no such thing as wasted space.
Amen.
That's my Chris, argument on that.
I love it.
With that, we're up against the top of the hour break. It's about a 5-minute break, so get a glass of water if you need to.
Or call for your luggage or whatever.
Okay.
Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on this Thursday, October 22nd, 2015. Our guest is Chris Putnam. He's a speaker, author, theologian, scholar.
Intellectual, yeah. Man. Wow.
His books, Petrus Romanus, Exo Vaticana, The Supernatural Worldview, and On the Path of the Immortals. I will be right back after this. Stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.